College football fans, welcome back to the College Ball Show. He's Marshall. I'm Chris. And we're here to discuss back and forth, banter back and forth about what else? College football. Now, week five, it's kind of funky because it started out pretty, like, blasey blah, pretty shitty, to be honest with you. Even those Friday games that I've talked about so much, they've been panning out. Not so much this week. Maryland got stomped at home by Iowa, who's actually throwing the ball, forward passing, and not just to the tight end. 51-14. You see, Alabama destroyed Ole Miss. Same with Georgia. They destroyed Arkansas. Even that, you know, the score was close to an extent later in that game, but Cincinnati had control of Notre Dame for quite some time. Notre Dame did get back in that game, and Cincinnati answered. And so my point is that the afternoon sessions were, you know, pretty weak, to be honest with you. But then, in a sense anyway, all hell broke loose. Kentucky used defense and special teams to beat Florida. You know, we were wondering about Michigan and Wisconsin. You know, Wisconsin's kind of owned them the last, like, five or six times they played. Michigan took them apart, basically. A&M got beat by Mississippi State. Hawaii beat Fresno State as an underdog. I think it was 3.5 points to UCLA. Arizona State just whooped on UCLA. Auburn won in a place that's not easy to win as a minor dog. So, yeah, you knew there'd be some ranked teams losing, four of them, right, because there was four ranked versus ranked. But the other five came as a surprise. So add 9 to that 25 already. Through week 5, we have 34 upsets in the AP, just continuing the record-setting pace. We talked about that last week. You know, the AP poll, you know, dates all the way back to 1936. So, yeah, sure, you could say all that's shitty rankings, you know, by the press. But then again, you know, they're putting new teams in there that deserve it at the moment because they just got normally a ranked win. So pretty freaking crazy, no doubt about it. So we're going to recap week 5, and then we're going to preview week 6. Preview, predict. We like to talk betting lines here, betting lines banter, upset of the week, and of course, the crafty, crappy pick of the week, which we're now up to 4-1 on the season. I think out of the 5, 3 of them have been home in 1 road win and 1 road loss. I think that's how it's gone. So the home team has paid off for me this season. Getting it done, 4-1 in the crappy pick of the week. And then, of course, the game's flying under the radar. We'll definitely, you know, talk about as well. But, I mean, Oklahoma, Texas, who knows what's going to happen in that one. Arkansas, Ole Miss. Georgia has another ranked team at Auburn. Maybe they slip up with a letdown. Penn State and Iowa is probably the marquee matchup. LSU and Kentucky. I mean, there is a lot of good games on the week's schedule, and we'll get into it in just a moment. If this is your first time listening to the College Ball Show, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeitoperadio. You don't have to go to Blog Talk and Rope It Open. Download the show directly there or listen to the browser if you don't want to. You can find this here College Ball Show on the Ropeitope Radio podcast platform. On Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Stitcher, and all that good stuff. We're also part of the Grilling True Sports Podcast Network, which can be found in a whole lot of places. Along with that, while you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegrillingtruth.com? And one more thing, if you're thinking about cutting the cord, or you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called DirecTV Stream. The prices start as low as $69.99 a month. The best of live TV and on-demand, no annual contract, no hidden fees. If you update or upgrade, I should say, to the choice or ultimate package, that'll give you 3 free months of HBO Max. Plus, you get to enjoy regional sports networks with no additional fees, which is, you know, an issue with some companies, the cable companies nowadays. like a lot of sports fans probably know. And then if you go all the way to the premiere package, you get HBO Max and Showtime already in there included. DirecTV Stream. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host, Marshall, and see how he's doing on this fine fall day. Up in Minnesota, though, man, it got to 78. It's still 74 degrees. It doesn't feel like fall right now. How you doing, my friend?
I'm good. Life is good. This fall weather down in Texas is nice. Can't complain at all. Got a little golfing weekend coming up with my dad coming down to visit. I got playoff baseball tonight. I got a good buddy who lives not too far from you who's a huge Timberwolves fan, and he's saying that you got to bet the Timberwolves season win total over. It's a lock. So,
yeah, isn't it 33 and a half? I think it's 33 and a half.
Yeah. And he's
well, they're going to get a top four seat. Oh, wait, hold on.
He follows that those boys as close as anyone I know. So he's calling that. So, yeah, I mean, it's just basketball. I mean, hockey. We got everything going on. It's a very good time of the year for sport fans. But for college football, my opening rant is kind of an opening moment of just being honest, because when I'm up and up, I like to brag and be cocky, and then when you get your butt kicked, you got to own up to it too. I was out at a sports bar last week with a drink in hand, ready to cheer on Lane Kiffin to try to upset Nick Saban. And all that, that didn't happen. I will tip my cap because to Nick Saban, they were playing. Ole Miss had the highest yardage in a game. They had the best offense in the country. They were averaging 620 yards a game. And Kiffin had a bye week. Everything was on the table for Ole Miss to make it a close game. And they never really had a chance. Ole Miss started the game off with a really nice kind of long sustained drive. And then I think they might have got hosed a little bit on a fourth down spot. But nonetheless, they got stopped. Kiffin went for it on a fourth and goal instead of taking 3 points. And Bama really just beat them up. It was a battle of the trenches. Alabama didn't go for any big plays. They kind of just dinked and dunked the whole way down the field. Obviously, they probably didn't want to get into a shootout with Ole Miss, which makes sense. But a massive tip of the cap, because I mean, obviously I'm massively biased. I love Lane Kiffin. I've loved the guy wherever he's been. And I think he's one of the best offensive minds in the country, if not the best. But with that being said, their offensive game plan got squashed. They were basically shut out for over almost 75% of the game. So whatever game plan Kiffin had, Saban trumped it. It was kind of, I guess, similar to the Brady and Belichick show we got to watch on Sunday night. So, hey, I love Ole Miss. I still think they'll be good, but they got their ass kicked. And I'm not surprised they lost, Chris, but I am surprised that this Alabama defense, who a lot of people thought could have lost the game to Florida, you know, literally pitched a shutout. And I'm a big tip of the cap on whatever game plan Saban had was marvelous, and that's all I got. But that's I was impressed as hell to see the score as to what it was in that game at halftime, sir.
Yeah, you're right. It took till 35-7 before that it wasn't a shutout. That the start though with your possessions, 16 play, like you said, turnover on downs, punt, turnover on downs, fumble. I don't know a whole lot about coaching, but I don't think that's that good. But, you know, it is what it is. Sometimes you got to live on the risky side. Clearly, 210-78 on the rushing side was a big difference maker. 37-59 to 22 minutes as far as, you know, time of possession. So that was they were like, well, hold on, dude. Like, we are the dominant team, Alabama. They're pissed off because of that Florida game and people saying there's no great teams. Speaking of saying there's no great teams, well, don't tell that to Georgia. The Georgia Bulldogs, I mean, they had 345 yards in total yards. 273 came from rushing. And this is very similar, 36-23 as far as time of possession, 13, excuse me, no turnovers for Arkansas, but 13 penalties. And they came in, much like you're saying with Ole Miss, I think probably the second in most yards. You know, they were up there, top 10, top 20 at least, as far as yards per game, 162 yards total. Georgia is not messing around this year. The run game feels like a notch back up to where it was. And this defense seems like the real deal, man.
The first quarter of that game, Chris, was a perfect example of how a college football crowd can play a huge advantage. In the first drive of the game, Georgia drove down the ball methodically. It was run, 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 run. And if you watch Arkansas, they have a really unique defense where they only have three down linemen and then pretty much four to five linebackers and like three safeties. So they play a three-man front, which for them works very well. If you look at Arkansas's last 3 years, they've done really well on defense. But when you play a three-man front against an offensive line full of some massive mammoth-ass dudes, like there wasn't any stopping the run. Georgia was getting 6 to 7 yards of carry, Chris, at will. And all the announcers and even me, I was thinking, like, I know you have your base defense, but if your base defense is getting gashed, you got to attack more. And Georgia moved the ball easily, so they scored a touchdown. And then that crowd was going nuts, and they had the coin toss, however it ended up. Arkansas started on the Georgia 20 in the student section. And Arkansas's first play was a false start. Second play was a false start. So now you're first and 20 with a stadium that had like 110 decibels. That's a bad start. And then you punt, give up a touchdown. Then after that play, you muff a punt and you get the ball on the 6-yard line. And that turns into a blocked punt touchdown. And next thing you know, Chris, it's 21-0 and the game's over. So it literally was a combination of Georgia's offensive line is really freaking good at run blocking. Arkansas really shot themselves in the foot. The crowd played a huge, huge advantage. And Arkansas really just kind of fumbled out the gate. As we've talked about throughout this year, Arkansas is a great team, but they're more known for running.
Right.
And it's hard to catch up in a game when you're down 21-0, no matter who you are. But when you're a running based team and you're down 21 points in a very hostile environment, It's hard to methodically work your way back in the game, Chris, with a run game when you're just, like I said, shot yourself in the foot. But, hey, credit to Georgia and credit to Alabama. All of Vegas was, I'm sure, very happy with that. We were laughing at the initial opening line for the Alabama right. game was Alabama minus 20. And then it got pounded down to 14, like, within a couple hours. But looking back, hey, Vegas missed that game 21. By 1 point.
21. And the over-under was 80, remember? I think it closed at 79, but boy, they didn't quite hit that number.
And the other main thing I heard from just gambling people and people talking football was, well, God, Arkansas, they're getting 18 points. Like, Arkansas's been playing good. They killed Texas. They, you know, they whooped up, you know, they're having good football. And they are a good football team. But that minus 18, that was never in doubt either. So Vegas made a killing. And then to top it off, I know it's NFL. But the crazy thing, they said that Sunday night game, Chris, was almost the most bet football game in football history.
Makes sense, too, now that there's more places open, too.
I suppose. And the ticket counter was 90% Tampa. So Vegas had a killing of a weekend with pretty much everything could have gone right for big games in Vegas this weekend went right. And that, you know, they're probably going to make another hotel.
Yeah, right. that was the back-to-back shutouts on defense for the Bulldogs. They've only given up 23 points through five games, which is pretty crazy. Just kind of cleaning up some of that stuff with that Bama game real quick. Bama tied the Central Florida record from a handful of years ago scoring at least 30 points in consecutive games. Right now it's at 31. They're actually tied with Central Florida. And Nick Saban, 23-0 against the former assistants. Don't ever cross the old man. He'll make you pay over over again. Yeah, that was pretty crazy. Now, Cincinnati and Notre Dame. Was Cincinnati ready to go on the road and play a good, not great Notre Dame team? They've had their issues as well. But an Irish team that was coming off a very impressive victory, how they just, you know, dusted off Wisconsin down the stretch of that game. Cincinnati gets it done 24-13. Gets their first victory over an AP top 10 opponent since 2006, I think. I want to say that was Rutgers, but I could be wrong. They look damn good, man. Kudos to the Bearcats. Like I said, their schedule is going to be an issue, like it is for a lot of, you know, non-power fives. SMU needs to be undefeated. But, man, they look good doing it. And for a while there, like I said, the 24-13, and even before they scored, it did tighten up. But what was it, 17-0 there for a while? I mean, they were in control of that game for quite some time. And the second, yeah, it was 17-0 at half. And in the moment they got back, they missed a field goal. The moment they got it to 17-13, boom, go right down there, score a touchdown, and then have them turn over on downs. I was impressed.
Yeah, the big issue is that Notre Dame's offensive line isn't that good this year. And Cincinnati's strongest point is their defensive line. So, obviously, looking, you know, hindsight being 2020, should have maybe wagered on this game. But when you have one team's massive strength going against another team's massive weakness, that's a bad recipe for Notre Dame. And it showed, too, because this is Notre Dame team who, I mean, they're not known for having, like, a prolific offense, but they've been doing okay against their opponents this year. But Notre Dame, up until this game, also hadn't played an elite defense, or one of Cincinnati's caliber, Chris. So, I mean, just from that observation of Notre Dame's offensive line has struggled this year, and Cincinnati's D-line is probably the best team, position-oriented part of the team, it shows you why the scoreboard is what it is. Notre Dame scored pretty much later in the game, kind of like a lot similar to Ole Miss, and couldn't get an offense going. You really don't see many shutouts in halves of college football. When you're comparing ranked teams against ranked teams, which we saw in a lot of these games. So, well, hell, actually, Arkansas, Notre Dame, and Ole Miss all got shut out in the first half, which is a rarity. But it goes to show you, Chris, and this kind of my takeaway to wrap up kind of all these games in a way, is that football in the trenches is still massively important. I know that the game has become more of a spread offense and, you know, a more of a high-scoring affair. But still, when it comes down to a really top-notch matchup, no matter who's on the field, having offensive linemen that can dominate or D-line that can dominate, vice versa, is still probably the most important part of football. It doesn't show a spread offense, but if your line controls the game, you control the offense, it's amazing, you know, what you can do on a scoreboard. Like, who gives a shit what kind of offense you run? If you can't block, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, that is for sure, especially at the high level. I mean, you know, and I thought it was pretty impressive that the quarterback there for the Bearcats, you know, almost threw for 300 yards and didn't have some kind of, you know, huge running game, which is a step in the right direction for them. So we'll obviously keep an eye on the Bearcats and hope that their schedule can get even better, because sometimes, you know, a team can start winning, and by the time you play them, it can be ranked. And, you know, who knows? We'll see. We'll see where it's at. And obviously, as long as they keep winning, and, you know, we could say it's not fair or whatever, but they're going to have to win pretty impressively, on, especially against some of these teams that are subpar. They're going to have to. But they do play some good teams, and they're just going to have to look good doing it. But like I said, we'll keep, you know, an eye on that. That'll be a talker pretty much the whole way, especially how high they're ranked. Obviously, they're not really ranked. No one's really ranked right now, technically, because the real rankings don't come out. So we'll see if that hurts or helps, or, you know, the resume building by the time with other teams. Speaking of resume building and just a building block, a foundation for a program, Kentucky. It wasn't pretty in Kentucky. They were 1 of 9 on third down. You know, they got beat on the time of possession big time. Florida had a bunch of penalties, 15 of them to be exact. But they got it done. They used a special team block, field goal, scoop. They just relied on their defense. You know, running and defensive play has been a staple of Kentucky as we've seen them improve over time. That stadium was just going nuts when old boy ran it into the end zone off of that blocked field goal. 20-13, Florida had plenty of chances to get this W. Kentucky held on, though.
And they're just a fun team. Again, at the start of the year, people were saying about how Kentucky's got a quarterback that can throw. But then he had a couple games where he couldn't throw. And you're like, okay, so what kind of offense they have? You know, and in a way, it doesn't quite matter because for the past 4 to 5 years, Kentucky's had a really good defense, and they've had a pretty solid someone, a running back or quarterback or wide receiver that can run the ball. And it really is more of an old school mentality of football. As you see by the scores of, they beat Mizzou by a touchdown. They beat South Carolina, who's not a good team this year, by 6 points. They beat Tennessee Chattanooga by 5. Like, Chris, this really is just a kind of a grit and grind blue-collar football team who for the past 3 to 4 years has pretty much won anywhere from 6 to 8 games every year. And they've made themselves relevant, you know, for a school that's obviously heavily known for basketball, and rightfully so. But I think you have a football team who plays their own style. And you also had a really good combination of the schedule. Florida comes in pissed off after blowing a chance to beat Bama. And you didn't catch them on their best effort. Let's just be honest. This wasn't Florida's best effort, but a sport is a sport. And it is your job as an athlete to get up and play every game you need. But we also know that emotions are big in college football. You know, these guys aren't NFL athletes yet. Like, there's so much range of skill sets and, you know, range of emotions and everything that goes along with that, that Kentucky got him at the right time. This is seen as a huge win for them. I think they've only beat Florida once in the past 27 years prior to this game. So clearly this is a game they circle on their calendar every year. So massive props to Kentucky. One of the biggest ones they've had in God knows how long. And you're 5-0 now in the SEC. Like, what more? You might not be able to beat Georgia or Bama this year, but as of now, you could sure as hell say you're the third best team in the SEC. And not many people are going to be able to argue with you. And that's a pretty big compliment for a school who 5-6 years ago wasn't even being talked about at all.
Yeah, that's for sure. Like you said, 16 in a row, Kentucky had lost to Florida, man. That's got to feel good just to get that monkey off the back. Penn State held Indiana to 0 points. That'll be the first time since 2000. And in his seventh season, the Michigan head coach, Jim Harbaugh, won his first game as an underdog. And slowly but surely, they kind of just grinded that game away. The quarterback got hurt on the other side. I guess he went to the hospital and whatnot. Hopefully he's doing okay. He hasn't been playing that great this year, but it is what it is. But speaking of monkey off their back, the last 5 or 6 times they've lost to Wisconsin, I don't think they've won maybe since 2000 or something like that at Camp Randall. Michigan just keeps the ball rolling and staying undefeated. And it's really starting to heat up on the east side. I mean, Ohio State dropped on to Oregon, but they tend to get better, you know, as the season closes. They're usually peaking, which we'll, you know, we'll see if that happens. Penn State has a chance to stay unbeaten, but in a tough game. We'll talk about that down the stretch here in this show. In Iowa, Michigan State and Michigan all undefeated. So this is interesting, but a big win, you know, a nice win for them. Any win on the road against a quality program, no matter what kind of year they're having, is pretty good.
Yeah, and a lot of this also is the fact that Wisconsin's offense is still absolute garbage. I mean, you have to give Michigan credit for sure. But, I mean, if you're looking at Wisconsin's QB box score, Mertz actually got hurt. I know he started the game 0 for 4. He went 8 for 15. He didn't come back in the third quarter. Chase Wolf went 3 of 8 for 52 yards with one touchdown and an interception. Maybe that's why he's not been filling in for Mertz, who's been having an awful year. This Wisconsin offense is just really bad. And they're 1-3 now, 0-2 in conference. And again, if I was a huge Badger fan, it'd be frustrating because, again, I still believe, Chris, they have a top 10 to 15 defense in the country. But it's really hard to for a person to maybe listen to our podcast who hasn't watched a Badgers game yet or be like, are you serious? Like, well, yeah, how the hell is a team 1-3 the top 15 defense? Well, your quarterbacks are that bloody awful. So I would be.
And they don't have a running game this year like they normally do.
No, they actually have.
Nowhere near.
No, they have some decent running backs, but you're right. They're not nearly as explosive as the guys they normally have either. So this is a bit of a down year, but even so, they still should probably be 2-2 at worst if their quarterback play was just even average at best. But it's not, so whatever. They're 1-3. And Michigan, hey, maybe this is the year they get their big monkey off their back, like five of them, and they knock off Ohio State. You never know. But it could.
They got their work cut out before they even get to Ohio State, too, you know?
Very true. And speaking of monkeys on the backs, and this is a kind of a well-known theme, too. K-State has always kind of had Oklahoma's number. They've been the one school that's found a way to beat Lincoln Riley a handful of times the last few years, along with Iowa State. But K-State plays OU really, really tough. And they had their quarterback come back, which was obviously a huge thing for K-State. And they did lose the game, 37-31. But hey, credit to K-State. My buddies were very happy because K-State was a 10-point underdog, Chris. They were down 14, and Oklahoma kicked off the ball after they'd scored, and they ran a touchdown back to the house. It was a very meaningless touchdown for the sake of the game, but all my friends were incredibly happy, as you can imagine, to cover with scoring a touchdown a minute to go. You know, it didn't affect the win and loss, but it did affect my buddy's pocketbooks. They were happy. But hey, if you're Oklahoma, poor Spencer Rattler, like, dude, you won another game by less than a touchdown. This Oklahoma team, they've not been winning pretty, but in a way, Chris, no one else seems to be winning that pretty either this year besides Bama and Georgia. So I'll tip the cap to Oklahoma. Again, this is a team who I believe has beat them two of the past five times they've played. So it is a tough road when K-State kind of plays their own style, too. They kind of have that slow motion spread offense. They seem to be able to slow down Lincoln Riley as much as possible. So I'm sure the Oklahoma fans are still wanting more from Spencer Rattler, considering you didn't have a blowout victory, but it was a game.
He had a good game, though. He was very accurate.
Anyway, 22 out of 25 for 243, two touchdowns, one pick, a quarterback rating of 90. That's definitely one of his better games he's had this year. But actually I could keep going on about this game, Chris, but if you're an OU fan, Spencer Rattler can win or lose his job about 5 days from now, and that's all that's going to matter. But hey, credit to OU for being undefeated now. But yeah, if you're Spencer Rattler, I would be doing all the film work you can, because you could possibly get benched in this next game when they play their big rivals, Texas, just down the road from me this following weekend.
So you think they're undefeated and he get benched if they lose this game?
Or if they I could see if let's say like Oklahoma comes out and gets down like 14-0 or gets down like 17-0 to Texas in the game, I could see Lincoln Riley pulling him in the game and like throwing him back in. I think I want to say they did one of those teams did it last year where it, I forget either was Texas or Oklahoma and the team one team got down early and they benched the quarterback. Actually, I think Rattler did get benched. He got benched and dropped back in. Yeah, but I'm
saying you're like, you know, like done. He'll lose his starting job. I don't know if he's going to lose his starting job.
I'm not saying I would do that. But with all the cheering they've been hearing at every home game and especially all the roars of benching him when they played West Virginia at home a couple weeks ago, I think if Texas beats Oklahoma and beats them like somewhat well, I could see there being a ton of pressure. Again, I can't predict what Lincoln Riley is going to do, but I could see them being in a situation where there'd be maybe giving the other kid a chance. Again, who knows? But all that amped up pressure, if you lose your big rival, it, maybe Rattler could, you know, get benched for a game. Who knows? It's just I would say it's a possibility.
It's they're freaking spoiled there if they're calling
for sure.
Rafters, Jesus Christ. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't think he's lived up to a number one pick that people talk about, but it's not like he's just been playing like shit either.
True.
Hawaii, this one was a surprise. I think it was like 11.5 or something like that. Not so much that they hung around, but they beat Fresno State. They got off to a good start, got up 10-0. Then Fresno State kind of settled in, got the minor lead at half, I think 14-10, and then got up 24-10. And Hawaii got a touchdown, turnover on downs. Another touchdown by Hawaii. It's a tie game. Then Fresno gets the ball back, fumble, leads to a field goal. Then they had a long, or not that long of a drive, but 13 plays in 3 minutes, 3:24. Ended up in an interception. Fresno, who's looked pretty damn good this year, goes down swinging to Hawaii. Big, big win. Auburn, you know, and Bo Ryan got a big win. They got another tough game coming up. We talked about how they're one of the teams with the schedule that's just, you know, crazy. Arizona State and UCLA. What can I say? For a while there, UCLA, I think they're up 10-3. Then they got up even 17-10, and they never could quite keep pace. And they had multiple turnovers on downs down the stretch of that game. And ASU got a big win. So, you know, they kind of needed a nice win here early in the season. They're off to a 4-1 start. And I thought that was a good win because UCLA has been playing pretty good this year.
And sadly, to kind of wrap up this past week, I got to talk about a game because not only did Lane Kiffin get embarrassed, I've had a good friend down here. She's basically a sister of mine, and she's a University of Tennessee's Volunteers fan. And she normally lives pretty quietly because Tennessee fans can't talk a lot of shit. But, and I'm also a Missouri fan. But for the first time in our 5-year friendship, she sent me a text and I had nothing to say back because Tennessee destroyed, murdered, and just hammered Missouri in Columbia, Missouri. The score was, 45-10 at half. And I think Missouri's a decent football team. They had the freshman quarterback of the year in the SEC last year. The coach appears to be an offensive mastermind coach. But Chris, we've had a lot of low moments on this podcast and of our team suffering, but I'm not sure what beats this for me in the past 3 to 4 years. Of seeing a team you love in football get beat by Tennessee, who for the most part every year becomes a laughing matter for something they do. But yeah, Mizzou was down 45-10 at half against Tennessee at home. And I'm just going to move on from that. And I hope it doesn't happen again for a long time where my Vols fan can talk trash to me because that was really painful to watch.
Yeah, that was a little bit of a shocker. Baylor drops a game on the road, 24-14. Both those teams were undefeated. The Cowboys from Oklahoma State move on to 5-0 now. The Baylor Bears were 3-15 on third down, had a fair amount of penalties, couldn't quite, you know, get over the hump. The Sooners. The Cowboys got to 219 on 59. That's right, 59 rushing attempts, which is crazy. That's nuts. I didn't even know it was that much. Had 24 first downs. They got the job done. They're 5-0. They got some big games coming up. But they're alive in the Big 12. I mean, obviously someone's going to lose here about a game we're going to talk about in a little bit. You know, with Oklahoma and Texas. So, I don't know. We'll keep an eye on them, no doubt about it. They've had some tight games, that's for sure. They've been right down to the wire with a lot of some good teams, though. There was another game I was going to talk about. So, should we crown Bo Ryan for winning on the road in Death Valley?
You mean Bo Nix?
Who did I say? Did Bo I say Ryan, Bo Ryan again? Didn't I do this week one? I did it for the Penn State game, week two.
Yeah, Bo Ryan's the former Badgers basketball coach.
They wish they had Bo Ryan. I'm pretty sure it was for that Penn State game.
You did, yeah.
Well, sometimes he probably wishes he was somebody else. But, you know, what are we to think of LSU in this win for Auburn? Because, obviously, anytime you win at LSU at night, it's something, but they're just not that all that good this year right now.
No, they've been in a funk, and I'm not sure what's going on. I don't know. Orgeron has not replaced his top caliber assistants with more top caliber assistants. You have obviously lost a ton of players to the pros, which, you know, is tough for any coach to deal with, but whatever kind of mojo and chemistry they had has not been coming back yet. And again, this is a school that is about as has high expectations as Oklahoma does for their quarterbacks. You know, like,
yeah,
I'm sure LSU fans are calling for his head, and this is a guy that won him a title with one of the best teams in college football history 2 years ago. You know, so you got to put things in perspective, but you just seem to hear stories that nothing, you know, it's like there's like maybe not the best chemistry. And again, Orgeron struggling to find his assistants. And it, you know, it's just nothing seems to be going quite right there. And Max Johnson's not an awful quarterback, but he's by no means great either. So,
sure.
Yeah, I guess for LSU, you're just looking to beat Bama this year. And maybe that could really wash a lot of stuff under the rug. But the way they've been playing, I really don't see that happening at all either this year. But yeah, it's just a tough year for LSU. And if you're Auburn, hey, a new coach, Bo Nix is doing enough of what he can do. I mean, this is the same Auburn school who a week ago literally was almost lost the game to Georgia State. It was like a 24-point favorite at home. And if it wasn't for a really, really, really shady pass that was ruled a complete catch, even though the ball entirely hit the ground, they would have lost to Georgia State. So, you know, I'm not going to get too happy about Bo Nix and think Auburn's going to, you know, do something special this year. But that is weird because they had the lucky rule reversal call with Arkansas last year. And they had a very weird – Auburn boosters must pay – maybe Charles Barkley, Chris, has a connection – with someone in the instant replay booth, and they get there's a certain Venmo sent or wired to get calls, because this is for the past couple of years now, they seem to get very good luck on what appears to the naked eye to be very obvious calls that go Auburn's way. So there's allegations that give Auburn credit, which they don't deserve. Yeah, something very fishy going on, brother.
This is where the Bo Ryan thing comes into play. I knew it.
How does Bo Ryan tie to Auburn?
just, you know, he's an athletic commissioner, an athletic director, and so he's, I don't know. Miami, you know, this the missed kicks this year with some of the football teams that I follow is really starting to get to me. Miami misses a kick at the end of the game to win it. After a really bad, poor start, they're playing their – this is the other thing, man. We finally get a quarterback. Last year, he had a great year. All pumped that he's coming back. You know, that last game, he freaking tears his ACL. Didn't really get to do much in the offseason. He's back. He was back at the beginning of the year, but now he's out again. So, you know, the transition thing where you got a guy that you're not ready to play yet, and it'd be nice to get him a year and some sloppy, you know, late game play and snaps and reps and all that, and then transition next year. And it's just not meant to be yet. But Miami made a nice little comeback with their young freshman quarterback, but they just couldn't get the kicker's good too. But of course, you know, not good enough, obviously. They missed a kick right off the frickin', just doinked it right off the, was it the right or left? I can't remember now. But anyway, that was ugly. My Gophers did get, speaking of ugly, that was a rain monsoon day at Purdue. Minnesota gets the job done 20-13. They did take some shots down the field and were able to convert on them. And that was kind of the difference of the game. The defense played good. Both offense struggled a little bit, but my Gophers did manage to get the dub. Clemson, speaking of just managing to get the dub, Clemson, once again, their defense has just got to be pissed off right now. They sneak by a pretty good Boston College team, 19-13. What else we got here? There was another game that was really tight. Oh, Central Florida's kind of really fallen off this year. They got beat by Navy. Not that Navy's bummy, but I didn't expect that. Boise State's having a struggle year this year, too. Maybe they can sneak up and beat BYU this over the weekend here, but they lost to Nevada at home again, 41-31. That was kind of a surprise there. I mentioned the crafty, crappy pick of the week, Rice and Southern Miss, 24-19. The Rice Owls take it home.
Another W in the crafty, crappy pick of the week that puts us 4-1 on the year. Just keep cashing tickets. I'm telling you, if you want to make some money, there's not a rhyme or reason to it. But as a show for the past 7-8 years, we're at about a 70% clip. And people in Vegas make livings off being at 62%. So I'm just saying. And we will have one of those later in the show as well. But to move on to, and USC did win. I'm not going to get too high on them because I did the last time we got their ass kicked the following week. But USC got a W, so credit, props to them.
Maybe Bo Ryan can go there and coach. Oh, wait, that's the wrong sport. Forget it.
Yeah, he could. Their basketball team, they seem to get a top recruit every year. Moving on to week six. As we foreshadowed or pre-shadowed or hyped up before, I'm a history teacher and English teacher. To start off next Saturday, which is in 4 days, Oklahoma plays Texas. That is probably the premier game of the week. You get the joy of Gus Johnson calling that game, which is always super fun because he just, I don't know, he's probably my favorite football announcer alive now. I just love hearing that guy call games. He's the best. So Gus Johnson will be on the mic. Oklahoma plays Texas, and that game kicks off at 11 a.m. Oklahoma currently is a 3.5-point favorite, Chris. I think, like usual, as we've said for Carolina and Duke in basketball, this is one of those cliche rivalries, but the cliche is true. It really doesn't matter what their win-loss record is, what Vegas thinks the spread is. Like, this is going to be a game where you can flip a coin, and on any given weekend, either team could win. Obviously, Tom Herman did have a pretty, really poor time there as a Texas head coach. I believe he went 1-5, so he wasn't exactly making Austin fans happy. But for this game, I'm thinking for once it's going to be kind of low scoring because Oklahoma's defense has won them a lot of games this year, as we've mentioned almost every podcast. Spencer Rattler's not been awful, but he's by far not been great. So I would think this to be lower scoring, as you see initially by the over-under, which is 63.5. Normally that's in the 70s for this game. So
yeah,
Vegas sees it being a lower scoring game. But to make a pick, I'm going to take Texas with the field goal plus a hook. I just think that Oklahoma's offense has not quite done enough. And I think that Texas keeps this game close. I'm not sure if they're going to win, but I will take in a game where I'd say it's pretty evenly matched up, Chris, I'll take a team to get 3.5 points. I think this will be a back and forth game. I think Texas's offense has shown it can score this year, and Oklahoma's defense will probably do a little bit to slow them down. But I just think Oklahoma's won almost every game this year by a touchdown or less, or it's been a single digit win besides their one blowout, Chris. I think this will be a fun one like usual, but I think Texas covers, and I think they might even pull off the upset in the Red River rivalry.
Cotton Bowl, 11 o'clock Central. They even had problems with Tulane. Nebraska, who's better this year, they actually look pretty good against Northwestern. Northwestern's having a down year, but they just snuck by them. Like you said, West Virginia, they just barely snuck by them. Now, Arkansas pretty much handled Texas in the second half. They did get a nice win to open up the season against our Raging Cajuns. And TCU generally plays Texas tight, as they did last week. They put up a 70 spot. They're like, oh, what's the over-under? Yeah, we're going to put up our side of it right here, 70-35 over Texas Tech, who actually got a nice win as well of late. One of the things that kind of stand out to me this year is the running game. Not just this year. They've been able to run the ball for, quite some time. But to average 268 a game to 155, that's pretty impressive. Now, the flip side, you could say they're giving up 170 to 83, but they've probably played, if you look at the top two teams each have played, I would favor Arkansas and the Raging Cajuns over the schedule. Neither of them are a weak schedule, but long story short, I don't know why I had to explain all this stuff. I'm going Texas too. I believe that they're going to get over the hump. Wasn't it like a quad? Was it a five time or four overtimes last year? Wasn't it some kind of crazy ass game last year between these two?
It was. Yes, you're right, for sure.
92 degrees in the Cotton Bowl. That's what it says it's going to be right down there in Dallas. You said fall weather. I don't know what the hell weather you're talking about. And then the other, so I'm with you there, my friend. And then the other primetime game, which it'll be funny. Let's see what, like you talked about, that's the marquee matchup. Let's see who gets the better rating. Both of them are during the day. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. Penn State at Iowa, number 4 against number 3. Iowa, 3 o'clock. And by the time the game's over, it'll still be light. It's something you got to keep in mind when it comes to Kinnick. 2-point favorite. So really, it's just like, we favor you only because you're at home.
I just think it's complete bullshit that Penn State got to play Auburn at night on a primetime game. They got to play Indiana at night. And then they let Penn State travel to Iowa and you play at 3. Because if you are a college football fan and you've ever heard the term Kinnick at night, that Iowa at night has beat many, many talented Penn State and Ohio State national title contender teams just at an ease. So I think it's a complete joke that this game is not at 7 o'clock at night. If it was, I would gladly tell you to bet Iowa night just because they have that special little karma to them.
Well, but they got Utah and USC in the primetime there on Fox. So, I mean, you can kind of see what they're thinking.
Good God. Jesus. Anyways, this one's really tough, Chris, because Iowa – okay, well, let's just go over the basics. Iowa's defense is badass. They've been causing – tons and tons of turnovers all year. They've been cashing in on their turnovers. They've been very opportunistic. And Iowa's offense really isn't that good. Now, if you look at the scoreboards, you can say, okay, Marshall, you're an idiot. Like, look at the scores. But
and they're passing more, too. They're actually passing the ball. They do forward passes, like I mentioned, more than just a 6-yard forward pass to their tight end this year.
They do. It's just their defense is literally just been lights out for them. And their defense forced 5 turnovers last game. Their defense scored against Iowa State and got multiple turnovers. This is the same team. Iowa beat Colorado State 24-14. Colorado State's a garbage team. So I guess what I'm trying to say here, Chris, is that at some point, this Iowa quarterback who's not that good in Petrus is going to get exposed, and your defense is going to have to carry you again. Well, I think he's going to get exposed this week because we've seen Penn State's defense, and Penn State's defense is pretty damn good. It might not be Bama or Georgia this year, but besides that, I don't know if I've seen a better one yet. So now Iowa's defense is probably going to have to score again, but are you going to get that luck of a couple of turnovers or a couple of fumbles? And to give Iowa's defense credit, they're doing this week on, week off, which is incredible because not many defenses can force multiple turnovers every week. But I think the luck just comes to an end here, Chris, because I don't think they can force another 2 to 3 turnovers again. So I'm going to take Penn State to win just because I think Iowa's offense will really struggle to move the ball because they're playing a really good defense. At least from what we've seen so far this year. Maryland last Friday, got punched in the mouth. They had a couple of weird turnovers. They had their kick returner get a really nasty knee injury, and things kind of unraveled from there. But I just think this is the weekend where I was like, dear Lord, our quarterback is not that good, and I think they slip up and lose. I hate saying that because I love picking Iowa at home, but I just think that they slip up too much this week, and Penn State finds a way to get another victory.
I mean, they just put up 51 points, but yes, of course, it had a lot to do with the turnovers, no doubt about it. Wisconsin could have beat, Penn State as well, if we're going to be, if we're going to talk about it a little bit. So I'm actually going to go Iowa. I think the difference maker is going to be Tyler Goodson. Goodson. This dude can, juke you. He can go through you. He can spin on you. He can make something out of nothing. Now, their playmaker for the Nittany Lions is Dotson, I believe is his name. He's damn good, too. Don't get me wrong. Obviously, you got to favor Clifford, I know he's not your favorite quarterback, neither mine, but just experience. He's a better quarterback than him. So I see what you're saying here. Yesterday I saw it at 41.5. It's already 40.5, the over under, which I think is set pretty much right. I got Iowa 19-16. I'll give you the exact score and everything.
All right, then I'll go Penn State 21-17.
21-17, you say.
And I would say the other top game of the morning.
What if it's overcast and they have to put the lights on? And it's kind of like a night game.
Oh, if that's the case.
Hold on. Hold the phone. Yeah, it's going to be 83 degrees. So
oh, okay. I was going to say, if that's the case, I got Iowa by 15. Like that. No question in my mind. But the other top ranked, I would say, game of the week is who's going to bounce back better? Arkansas plays Ole Miss. We talked about both of these teams getting their butt kicked to start off the show. And now they got to play each other. Normally in college football, when a team has a letdown game, you normally play an opponent who's coming off like a good game, or you don't even know. Like both of these teams got embarrassed on national television. So which coaching staff can do a better job of recovering their players? But initially, when I think about this game, Chris, last year, Arkansas forced Matt Corral into, I believe, 5 picks. Barry Odom's defense had Matt Corral massively confused, massively. Like this is time where people were weren't sure if he was going to be the quarterback for Ole Miss. Now this kid has also now become a Heisman favorite this year. So clearly Matt Corral has moved on, but
I don't know about a favorite, but yeah,
well, he was the Heisman favorite going into, his game.
Keyword was.
He's still in the running, but no longer the favorite. Yeah. Fair. But I just can't block out of my head that this dude, last time they played this defense, had 5 picks. So
right.
I got to take Arkansas plus the 6, and I hate doing that because I'm a Lane Kiffin guy. I drive my co-host crazy talking about the guy. But clearly, whatever scheme Arkansas had last year was very effective, and it messed with Matt Corral. So I'm assuming that scheme is going to be the same idea. And you could say that Ole Miss's offense has gotten better, sure, but Arkansas has probably gotten better too. And Arkansas probably, I mean, Ole Miss's defense has improved, Chris, but it's not Georgia. So you got to imagine Arkansas is looking forward to running the ball and having a chance to breathe an offense this week. So I'm going to take Arkansas with the 6 points. I hope I'm wrong. I hope Kiffin bounces back, but there's too many X's and O's in my head to make me want to say Arkansas is going to cover. I'm not sure who's going to win, but I'll take Arkansas with the points. And I think Corral is going to have issues. But again, I think the biggest thing is which coach can get his guys amped up, because both of those teams suffered big punches to the gut last week. And that's hard to recover from sometimes in college football.
Yeah, that's a good call. And, you know, I hate to do this, but I have very similar feelings. And I'm looking at that 6, and I'll gladly take that 6. Arkansas is no joke. It's a road game, though, so that'll be interesting. But, I'm there with you. So we're kind of on the same page most of this. We have the Iowa-Penn State, though. And then Georgia-Auburn, I actually have it 30-16 to kind of play with the spread, 14.5. 30-16 Georgia beating Auburn. If there's ever a time where Bo Nix, dude, you know what's so funny? I just opened up my my college football week 6 blog, and I literally have Bo Ryan written there as the card. I swear to you, I'm looking right at it. I just opened it up to check the score, what I said, and next thing you know, I look up and it says Bo Ryan. I should just keep that in there. But I'm so glad I looked. If there's ever a time, you know, for Bo Nix to say, hey, you know, I'm the guy on campus. You want to be the guy on campus, beat Georgia. I just don't see it. 30-6 is what I got. Too much run, too much defense. And, you know, with Georgia, whether it's Daniels or Bennett, they both played enough to where it really doesn't matter right now. I mean, I think ultimately Daniels fits better, and you could kind of feel that last year, you know, down the stretch. But it's not like Bennett's a bum. He's had plenty of – that Stetson Bennett, he's had plenty of playing time.
I'm with you on that. Georgia's too good of a team. Auburn has been playing good football. They've had some nice wins over they lost to Penn State. But then they had a nice win over LSU, but it's just a different team. As of right now, Georgia and Bama are the two best teams in the land right now. It's really not that close. There are a couple of point spreads I want to pass out just for those who enjoy maybe wagering with a friend or wagering in Vegas or with some gambling devices you may have. A couple that stand out to me. One for sure, which really, really surprised me is, I just had it, Kentucky's a 3-point favorite at home to LSU. LSU is not a good football team this year. They're just not. And I hate saying that because I got a good buddy who's an LSU fan, but they're not a good football team. And I suppose you could say that Kentucky's going to have an emotional letdown after beating Florida.
Right.
But LSU struggles in the trenches this year. And Kentucky is known for basically playing like blue collar, like we're going to beat you in the trenches football. So I will gladly take a more physical team at home who, again, maybe there's a hangover factor, but you just, LSU doesn't win the line of scrimmage this year. So there's no way in hell I wouldn't take Kentucky -3. I think that is
take it
to the window. And the other one I truly like, which I just saw, is, give me one second, I apologize, would be, damn it, okay,
Michigan, Nebraska. They're only up 3.5. Michigan. I mean, it's on the road. Nebraska's played better. Go ahead. Sorry.
That one scares me. I'm not quite sure how to think about that. Nebraska has pretty much played everyone good this year, but they've come up short. But I like Wake Forest. Some people actually have them winning the ACC this year. which who the hell would have thought?
Hey, it's not impossible. That's for damn sure.
I guess when before the season started, they were 150-1. We were sleeping on that, Chris, because dear Lord. But they traveled to Syracuse. Syracuse is not a great football team this year. And I say that because Syracuse lost to Florida State on Saturday. So if I'm going to take the right now, the current favorites in Wake Forest to win the ACC or possible favorites to win it against the Syracuse team that lost to Florida State, hell yes, take it to the window. Wake Forest -6.5, get it under that 7. But I massively love Kentucky. Kentucky is my lock. Wake Forest is a very confident pick, but again, get it under the 7. That is just a couple of wagers which I would enjoy. Oh, and another one right above it, BYU. Now, with this being said, check BYU's quarterbacks, because when they played last week, they were on their third string.
Yep, exactly.
A very good football team this year, Chris. Very good. And if they have either their first or second string quarterback back, I would take them to beat Boise State. Maybe the spread's only 5 because Vegas knows they're going to play with a third string quarterback. I'm not sure. Right. But if BYU's first or second string quarterback is in, take them, because as you said during the initial start of our podcast, Boise State's having a rough year, and Boise's playing and BYU's playing football out of their mind. So Kentucky for sure bet, Wake Forest bet, and bet BYU if their quarterback status is not on the third string kit.
Virginia Tech, a 1-point dog at home to the Irish, who's going to be looking for blood, but they may not find it there. Enter Sandman and all that type of stuff. What is the over under for TCU in Texas Tech? 61. I was like 81. 61. I'd actually go over on that one. I'm looking at that Stanford, Arizona State, 12-point favorite at home. I mean, Stanford, you know, they're not a great program like they were probably 6-7 years ago, but they grinded out a win in overtime against Oregon, 31-24. They have a dominant win over the Trojans. They lost to UCLA, but they weren't supposed to beat them anyway. So to me, I'm looking at that as the against the spread. Can Stanford sneak in under? Those Friday nights have been good games, so I'm kind of looking at that one as well. Any other items before we get to this crappy pick of the week, sir?
And the other line that just throws me off a little bit, then we'll get to that. Baylor's -3 at home to West Virginia. So West Virginia, you play Oklahoma super tough, and then you lose at home like by double digits to Texas Tech, who the week prior gave up 70 to Texas. Like, I'm not quite sure what West Virginia is. They have a good running back. They have a good quarterback. But, and then, you know, Baylor, you beat Iowa State, then you lose to Oklahoma State. But West Virginia, they've tough loss to Oklahoma. Then you get your butt kicked at home to a bad Texas Tech team who, you know, something doesn't seem right about that line. Like, I feel Baylor should be getting more points. That one seems a little fishy. So maybe do a little bit of research and diving on that. And my last part is Tennessee is a 10-point favorite to South Carolina. South Carolina is not a good football team this year. Their offense isn't that good this year. Their defense is okay. But Tennessee is -10.5. They're clearly playing the best football they've been playing in quite a while. So I would look at Tennessee and look at Baylor for fun. But again, stick with Kentucky for sure. Are you ready, Chris?
I'm ready, sir.
Okay.
Lay it on.
So we call this segment the crappy pick of the week because it's two awful football teams playing against each other. But I believe there's 135 D1 football teams. This may be statistically the worst matchup. And we've probably done 80 to 90 of these games, probably close to almost 80 to 90 of these games in our podcast history. This might be the statistically worst matchup of all time in our podcast history. Because at 2:30 Central Time. And Chris, this is not even on ESPN Plus. It didn't even make that damn list.
It just says nothing.
You have
they're playing. UConn, maybe you could bring a drone over it and watch it.
You have the UConn Huskies playing the UMass Minutemen. I'm gonna stop right there and let you enjoy the hell out of probably the worst crappy matchup game in our 7 to 8 year history. Period. These two teams are both trash. Go ahead, have fun.
Boy, this is the definition of trash. Just hot, smelly, stinky trash. I mean, if this was, you know, early 90s, though, in college basketball, this is a hell of a matchup right here, UMass and Connecticut. But it's not. It is not. Connecticut, they're both, you know, I mean, this does fit the bill right here. Holy shit. They're both, wow, it's like I can't even talk right now. 16.5 and 14.6, that's their offense. It doesn't really matter who's what, right? Now, you know, UConn is only giving up 40. I mean, 39.7, considering that's a lot better than UMass, who's giving up 47 a game. Somehow, though, 518 a game, my God. This is really bad. 279 yards UMass has given up through the air and 239, 518 total. While neither of them, for college standards, can really run the ball all that well. Wow, this is a bad one, man. You really did hit it freaking right on the nose. And if you just those wondering, Capacity Stadium, 17,000 in Amherst, Massachusetts. Warren McCork, is that live? Alumni Stadium? Hey, we're going to talk alumni here in a second. Wow. Tickets low as 20, $22 you're charging is the lowest one? Really? To this? Is this, hold on, maybe they're saying, hey, well, Amherst, they got money up there. So forget it. That's why it is. Okay, that makes sense.
Oh, okay.
Because otherwise, it's like, are they paying people $22 to go? If you have a drone in that area, just fly that bitch over the top and just get a good look at this game, because otherwise it's going to be like it never happened. Okay. So technically the Huskies are a 3.5-point favorite, but according to ESPN's Football Power Index, and I saved it until this, I forgot to mention it, but I saved the Power Index, 62.1 to 37.9, huh? Wow, they are really heavy on UMass. And I've been kind of living high on the hog with the home team. Okay, when I look at who they've played recently, this is what I see. I see a team, you know, UMass played some better teams, no doubt. They got housed, but they played some better teams. Boston College kind of stands out to me there as far as because they actually put up points. But what I like about UConn, and Vanderbilt's garbage too, but what I like about UConn is they've been knocking on that door. 30-28, 24-22. They lost to Holy Cross. Holy Cross. How am I going to pick a team that got beat by Holy Cross? This is tough. This was the Crusaders. Oh, boy. Okay, I'm going to do it, though. I've been milking the home team too much. You got to know when to maneuver. The Huskies have been knocking on that door. They're going to kick that door in a major way. UConn gets the job done in this Upper East Coast just squash match, dude. This is a great game.
For UMass,
this is going to be nice here for the alumni. Fine.
We will have to recap this. This alumni battle could go on for a while. Bill Pullman and Richard Gere are two very good actors. Rick Pitino went to UMass. Julius Erving went to UMass. Natalie Cole, Marcus Camby, a point guard I love named Chaz Williams, who went to a couple of NITs with the Minutemen. I didn't know Jonathan Quick, an AHL goalie, won a couple of Stanley Cups for the Kings, went there. Victor Cruz, the salsa dancer for the Giants a couple of years ago, went there. And I think about rounds it up. Okay. Now for UConn, we could spend, I don't even know, Rebecca Lobo, Ray Allen, Meg Ryan, Maya Moore, Kevin Ali, Sue Bird, Diana Taurasi, Tina Charles, Kemba Walker, Rip Hamilton, Khalid Al-Amin. I mean, Chris, Emeka Okafor, is it really even close? Breanna Stewart. Like, I know I'm naming a lot of women basketball players here, but I mean, a lot of these names are like some of the best women basketball players of all time. Like, I don't see how this really is even a battle. This is kind of a beatdown. Rip Hamilton. Oh, shit, I didn't know. Speaking of college football, Kirk Ferentz, the Iowa head coach, actually went to UConn. That I was unaware of. Huh. Shabazz Napier. I mean, the UConn basketball list is so deep that it's Andre Drummond. I did not know he went there. George Springer, The Houston Astros baseball player. That's news to me. Like, this one's dumb. Kian Erse, who is a good WNBA player. I got to tip the cap to UConn. So just to get this straight, you got the Huskies. I got the Huskies.
That's right.
All right. Well, go UConn, go. Maybe Rebecca Lobo and Maya Moore can go dial up some plays and help the offense out a little bit, because those women know how to win titles. So on that note, again, I will have a recap of that game for you. I'm not sure how I will find highlights, but I will have a recap. My opening rant next week will be breaking down the UConn and UMass game, because damn it, y'all deserve that. So thanks as always for listening.
0-5 against 0-6, right? Is that what it was? They're both 0-6.
Yes.
0-5.
We appreciate your love and support. But again, hey, the Crafty Crap pick of the week is 4-1. 2 years ago, we went 10-3. I'm just saying, that thing pays bills. So until next week, we'll be back. Thank you for the support. Mask up, stay safe. Enjoy your football this week. The boys are out tonight. Peace.